And now, Move the Sticks with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Move the Sticks, presented by Zaxby's. DJ Bucky back with you. Buck, happy Thanksgiving, man.
Man, happy Thanksgiving to you and yours. Like, it's a fun holiday, man. So much to be thankful for. Obviously, I'm thankful for you and our partnership and all the people behind the scenes, Mark Brady and the Bill, everyone that makes this stuff happen for us on the Move the Sticks podcast. And I'm just really excited, man. Look, 2020 has been a very, very challenging year for a lot of people. But I think for you and I and our listeners or whatever, most of us hopefully have made it through and we're going to come out of it on the better end.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it, Buck. Obviously, very thankful for you, for our whole team. I throw a Ryan Bartlett in there for the job he does with the video show as well. Thankful for the whole bunch. And I'm also thankful, you know, you mentioned it, for all you guys that have listened to us and watched us over the years. We've been doing this for a long time now. And a bunch of you have been with us from the beginning. Some of you have just recently hopped aboard, but you guys have always been real kind to us, and especially on social media, as well as leaving us those reviews on Apple Podcasts with nice things to say on YouTube videos, everything. So we appreciate you guys joining us and staying with us. And this is really the fun time of year because we're getting towards the meaningful games in the college season, the NFL season. We're a day closer to the draft every day, which is what we love as well, and in the team building side of things. So it's a fun time of year.
Yeah, it is a fun time of year. And I think from an evaluation standpoint, even though the pandemic changed the college football calendar, still, man, when I get to Thanksgiving, I'm thinking, hey, we got to get these reports in. We need to wrap it up in terms of who are the guys, who do we really need to dig into, who are the top 100, 150 guys that I definitely need to know about, and really hone in really on those blue chippers, those guys that are at the top of the board.
No doubt. Well, we've got a fun show today. You had a chance to catch up with Trent Dilfer, our good buddy, who's doing a phenomenal job as a high school coach at Lipscomb Academy there in Nashville, Tennessee. But also, everybody knows Trent, Super Bowl winning quarterback. He's been a kind of the key cog here in the Elite 11, who's been training and working with all these top young quarterbacks. You join him on that each and every year, Buck. But you guys have a great relationship as well. And you had a chance to sit down and talk with Trent about what's going on with some of these young quarterbacks in the National Football League. Nobody better at discussing that than our good buddy, Trent Dilfer.
Man, it's always fun when I get a chance to talk to guys who are really, really close, guys that I consider friends, mentors, brothers, however you want to share it. Like, the love between myself and Trent Dilfer really goes beyond the game and the things that we've done together. But now I'm really excited and I'm really thankful, considering the Thanksgiving holiday, that I am talking to the hottest coach in the game, Trent Dilfer, head of the Lipscomb Academy, playing in the state championship. My man, how's everything going?
It's going good, Buck. Thanks for the nice words. It's been a really rewarding journey here at this high school thing. So proud of our coaches, our boys, and got a big one here December 3rd.
Hey, Trent, so this is funny because we both are second-year head coaches. And I tell you, man, the high school thing has been so rewarding for me. I've learned so much more about ball since I've been in the high school game than I ever could imagine. How has it been for you, just in terms of what have you learned now that your feet are in the grass as a high school head coach compared to just being an analyst and other stuff?
I think the biggest thing is, as a player, as an analyst, sometimes you live in a little bit of an idealistic world. You're playing with the best athletes in the world. You're evaluating the best athletes in the world. And then sometimes when you're given analysis as a commentator, it gets, I don't want to say dumbed down, but you have to simplify it enough to just, that guy's better than that guy. You know, Willies and Joes, dude versus dude. In the high school level, you might have some very gifted players, and we do. We have guys that will play on Saturdays in big games in the SEC and the ACC, and we may even have some guys that play on Sunday. But you also have guy 48 on your roster that needs to be productive for you on a Friday night and has some really important roles, and he just can't do some of the things physically that we're used to. And how you communicate, how you teach, how you get your coaches to teach is incredibly important for the success of your team. And then the other thing, too, is it's a different age. You know, we came together in college and the NFL winning life or death, right? And when you're winning, you know, your wife's pretty, your food tastes good, everything's great. When you're losing, it's the opposite. Here, they have to have a sense of accomplishment, a sense of purpose that goes beyond what the scoreboard says. So you really have to create a culture where they're getting better. It's process driven, and they're always trying to reach their human potential. You're really celebrating a lot of little successes. So, you know, your fifth team receiver in a perimeter drill today, actually, it happened. We're in a perimeter drill, and he does a great job of creating leverage and elbows in, thumbs out, palms out, punching in the chest, creating space for the perimeter receiver to catch the ball and run. You know, when you pull him aside and you compliment him for that, a job well done, all the work that he's put in is paying off. That's his game night. That might be the best thing anybody says to him in the football world for 4 months. So you have to recognize those things as well. I can go on and on and on, but there's just so many things that are different than the highest levels, but I would argue probably more rewarding.
You know, because I feel like I'm always taking notes, right? Because we sit in a unique chair because we're able to talk to some of the best and brightest minds at the highest levels. But sometimes we take those nuggets and we try to share them as we're building our own programs or impacting young people. Who have been the biggest influences on you in terms of your coaching style or the way you handle your team or your players?
That's a great question. I'll start with two coaches I have on my staff. Phil Dawson, who kicked 21 years in the NFL. Yeah. He's never coached, but always dreamed of coaching. Always took a coaching approach to his craft. And then Sione, who we both know really well, head coach of a huge program in Northern California, two big programs in Northern California, really took a leap of faith to come out here and be my defensive coordinator. I lean on those guys. I mean, we kind of make co-head coach decisions most of the time. Usually the three of us, along with Joey Roberts, huddle, talk about culture, talk about programming, structuring practices, time off, lifting schedules. I'd add Luke Riches into that. Sometimes I forget that I have the best strength coach in the country. He's with the Houston Texans before he came here, went to two Super Bowls, won one with the Broncos. So to have those minds on my staff where you're always bouncing things off, you're always learning from them. A lot of my coaching style comes from a combination, I would say, of Jim Sweeney, who very few remember, was a legendary head coach. Jeff Tedford, who was my offensive coordinator at Fresno State, went on to be a head coach at Cal and was an offensive coordinator at Tampa. And then again, at Fresno State before he retired. I pull a lot of Holmgren and Norv out of there too. Norv Turner, I learned a lot of offense from. I say a lot of what we do offensively has its roots in Norv stuff and some West Coast stuff from Holmgren. And then Tony Dungy, just from a global standpoint, you know, I learned so much from Tony on how to manage personalities, how to coach coaches, how to coach coaches hard, but then give them time to be real people and not just lock themselves in a cave. So I've had some incredible mentors and influencers in my life, and I try to pull off all of them. You know, I think you know this about me, Bucky, but when we started doing Elite 11 in the opening, I really wanted to take that serious. You know, I wanted to be a good leader for those things. So I did a lot in 2008, 2009, 2010, a lot of planning on what coaching looks like and what my coaching style would be. A lot of journaling, a lot of studying of other great coaches. And I think that process of learning as a player and then 08, 9, 10, 11, and then these last 2 years, I'm kind of settling into what I think my coaching style is. And I've stolen a lot of good things from a lot of good people.
It's funny that you say that, right? Because I'm in my office and I just want to show you this. This is my journal.
Yeah.
This is my leather bound journal. And Trent, I can tell you every day something goes into it. A nugget that I hear, something that I think about, a tactic that I'm trying to master so I can take something complex, simplify it, and spit it to my coaches and players in an understandable way. And it takes a lot of time to vet that out. And so because you're now in this unique situation, and I know I see you on TV and you talk about it, how has being a coach made you a little more empathetic towards coaches when you're talking about what they're doing on Saturdays and Sundays and developing their players?
It has. I think one, you know, I always go back, I look a lot less now on what schemes, tactics teams are using and more the vibe of their team. That's probably the simplest word I could use. You can call it culture, you can call it temperament, but just the vibe of their team. I look at Indiana and this coach at Indiana, what he's done.
Tom Allen, yes.
Yeah, he's done that by not just preaching it, by showing energy. right? There's guys that suck. There's energy vampires. There's guys that bring life with their energy. And it's obvious that he went in there and he said, you know, we're going to be a bunch of guys that breathe life into one another. I love what he said at halftime against Ohio State. You know, I'm watching that game, kind of getting away from him. And he says, the character of our team is going to show. And they start doing these cutaways to the sideline. And guys are loving each other. And they're active. They're in their butts whipped. But they're active and energetic and excited to be in the game. And they know they're going to take care of them. And they actually made it a ball game. So I look at the vibe of teams. See teams where guys are – shoulders are slumping. They're too hard on themselves. Woe is me attitudes. That tells me there's something going on with the vibe, the culture, that probably goes back to something that happened on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. And you start pointing at those things. I've really learned to appreciate the great coaches and the great programs. And that's not always wins and losses. The Northwestern, You look at what Fitzgerald's done at Northwestern, not just because they're winning, but even when they're not winning, I've always admired him because his team's always played hard. 11 hats to the ball. Guys are running to the ball. They're getting off tackles. They're playing with juice. They're never quitting. You never see a Northwestern team kind of feel sorry for themselves and lay it down. So I guess long-winded answer to say that I look at it very differently now that I'm coaching. And I try to steal something. I watch a ton of football on Saturday, a lot of football on Sunday. And I'm always looking for things still to make us a better program.
Yeah, it's funny because I think we're in lockstep with that. Like, I think I probably put more time into just looking at the game and really paying attention to coaches and what they say pre-pressers, post-pressers, how they handle situations and those things. And so I want to use that as a jumping point to start talking about these young quarterbacks in the league because I know them really well. And because we talk about it and because I know you know Tua Tagovailoa very, very well, I just kind of want to talk about the situation that took place in Miami when they sat him down. And just based on what you know about him, how do you expect him to bounce back and handle the adversity that has suddenly popped up for him?
I think it's great. I mean, Joe and I were talking about it on Sunday night, I think, or Monday morning, how what a neat opportunity for him to show his character. We know that he doesn't lead by circumstance. He's a natural born leader. He's a life bringer in terms of his energy. He doesn't let circumstance dictate his attitude. So I think it's a great opportunity for his team to see him thrive in this little piece of adversity. I think that there's also perspective on his struggles. Vic Fangio did a heck of a job against Derek Carr and Patrick Mahomes. Tua's not the first one that Vic Fangio's defense got after a little bit. So he's going to learn some real lessons from what the best defensive coordinators do. To take you out of your game. I think his game will grow. I think this is where Fitzpatrick's important too. I think Fitz is one of those great minds in the game that even if he's playing or not playing, he's got a very analytical brain for the game, and he can sit down with Tua and say, hey, here's what I was seeing on the pick that cost us the game. Here's why I threw it. Hey, in your 20 passes, here's how they're defending you. And in a very short amount of time, Tua can take some nuggets away from that experience. So I think it's all good that he got benched. I think it's all good that he's facing this adversity. And now if I thought he was a fragile soul, I wouldn't be saying this, but I know he's been hardened. I know his attitude's second to none. And I know he's always been a bounce back guy. So I expect him to bounce back and play some of his best football in the next few weeks.
You know, it's funny. This is a unique time to be a young quarterback in the league. I mean, it was hard when we played, and particularly when you played the position, but now there are more voices, more opinions, more noise on the outside. If you could advise a young quarterback on how to handle all of this stuff, what would you tell them right now?
It's a big question. I think the biggest thing is, you know, you have to literally tune it out. I mean, I would not have Instagram. I wouldn't have Twitter, but that was me. You know, I just wouldn't let the noise come in. Wouldn't read the papers. Definitely wouldn't watch the TV shows. I think it's hilarious when I see these quarterbacks engaging with TV personalities on DM or on Twitter in front of the world. Why are you listening? But I think bigger than that is I really try to, you know, get them, and I do this with my quarterback, is every single play, okay? Every play is the biggest play of your life. And if you put that pressure on yourself down in and down out and have the expectation of perfection and fall for greatness, then you're going to be your harshest critic. You won't lose confidence because you're going to have a lot of victories in there. So you'll gain confidence because you'll have a lot of many victories. But you won't be worried about criticism because you'll be your harshest critic in that process. Going one step further, every chance you have to be the quarterback. So being the quarterback is more than taking the snap, right? Being the quarterback happened. It's happened in the room next to me as we're talking, as the offense is meeting, and our quarterback is having to answer to some mistakes he made in the first matchup against his team. We're playing the state finals. He gets called out to talk about the scheme and talk about decision making. And by taking that leadership role of being the quarterback in a meeting room, being the quarterback in the weight room, being the quarterback at a pep rally, being the quarterback all these different times, the more you're the quarterback, the more hardened you become to the burden of that quarterback leadership and just becomes a second hat to you. So I think all that goes into it, but I think you have to, and this is where I think coaching is really important of the quarterback position, is all this stuff has to be emphasized by the coaching staff constantly. All the opportunities you have to grow and develop, but you're never going to be there. If you're Tom Brady, he still doesn't think he's reached the pinnacle. He's always climbing for something more. You give a quarterback that perspective and the rest of this stuff kind of settles and goes away.
You know, it's funny because you talked about the noise, and there was a lot of noise about Justin Herbert prior to the draft. A lot of questions and doubts and can he get it done? And now he's been celebrated. And you're talking about people saying that he may be the best one. When you've had a chance to look at Justin Herbert even casually, what have you been most impressed with by him, from him?
His decisiveness. He has been so decisive with the ball. I mean, there was no question of his talent. I don't think very many of us argued about the talent. We kind of all said, all of us that have this job of evaluating quarterbacks, they're all ice cream, right? Ice cream's awesome. Some like vanilla, some like mint chip, some like Rocky Road, some like whatever your favorite ice cream is. There's different flavors that you like the most, but at the end of the day, ice cream's awesome unless you're
lactose intolerant.
We all like ice cream. They're just different versions of ice cream. And Justin was a rare flavor that had a lot of power and twitch in it. His skill set jumped off the tape. I remember I wrote an article for The Athletic 2 years ago where I talked about how it was a rare combination of power and twitch. And that should serve him very well. I think the question was, one, he played college football in Canada, as Matt Hasselbeck used to say. And if you play in the Northwest, it's like playing in Canada. Nobody watches you. So a lot of people really hadn't seen a lot of his games. So then you get to the game tape, and you're looking at it from such an analytical view. Okay, it's too high. He should do this. It's one high. He should do that. Oh, here's decision-making and conflict, blah, blah, blah. And you kind of talk yourself out of how good he is because some of us, I frankly don't understand what they were doing up there all the time. I think I know a lot of it, but I don't understand all the whys. So you don't have all the answers. And then it was, you know, you're not sure with some of these young guys once they go to the big time, right? Once the stage is really big, how they're going to respond. Well, we knew how Tua and Burrow would respond. They played on the biggest stage. SEC is the NFL just on Saturdays. So you know they've been hardened to that environment. With Herbert, you're like, I don't know. So to say I'm surprised he's having this type of success, I'm not surprised of the types of plays he's making because he made these same plays in college football and the talent jumped off the page. I also think Pep's doing a great job with him. Rip Shearer's doing a great job with him. And they're doing a great job with him managing his young career. But I'm talking way too much, Buck. I'm sorry.
No.
Sorry. This is what I've been saying about these three. Let's hold off on saying who the best is until like year three.
Yes.
Hopefully we're talking about them like Eli, Ben, and Rivers, where all three are amazing. They're amazingly different, but they're amazing. I would love nothing more than to see that class go on to be Hall of Famers. This next class go on to be Hall of Famers. The class before, right, have incredible careers. We know Patrick is going to be there. So I think the state of quarterbacking is awesome, and this is just the next three that makes it more awesome.
Yeah, it's funny that you talk about that, and I appreciate you sharing so much time. I have a couple more that I want to get to because I have to mention Burrow because we talk about Tua and Herbert. Burrow has the injury, and I'm not necessarily leaning on you for your insight in terms of what you've seen for him, but if you were his closest confidant and having dealt with injuries, how can he take this time where he's away and become a better version of the player that we saw when he shows up again?
He's already done it. I bet you he has this answered already. He did this between his junior year and his senior year at LSU. The guy was average at best. He admitted it at the Heisman Trophy ceremony. He was average at best. And he took a workmanlike approach, a day in, day out. I'm going to do the work. I'm going to do it more than anybody else. And I'm going to show up my senior. I'm going to light the world on fire. And guess what he did? He can take that exact same approach to rehab. He can take that exact same approach to leadership within his organization. He can take that exact same approach to his film study, all the little things that it takes to be a master of this position. He'll do it. Like, I have zero doubts that this dude, he's going to probably wait a couple weeks for the swelling to go down for his surgery. He's going to have surgery, and he's going to be calling all the specialists around the country saying, what's the best way to rehab? How can I speed it up? Okay, while I'm rehab, what do I need to pay for to have it at my house? So I can be doing it in my house, so I can have my 350-inch TVs, have different film on. I'm going to study the game. He's going to study his playbook. He's going to be having Zoom meetings with his coaches, working on schemes. This guy's going to attack it. He's not going to feel sorry for himself. I get so sick and tired of hearing analysts say, oh, it's so tragic. Great athletes don't feel that way. They're like, okay, I got kicked in the stomach. Let me get my breath back and go back to work. I'm more concerned with the Cincinnati Bengals organization than I am Joe Burrow. That organization just got kicked in the groin. Now they don't have the hope they had when he was playing. I don't worry about Joe Burrow one bit based on what he did from his junior year at LSU to his senior. He'll just replicate that in a different fashion, and he'll be better than he was when he got hurt.
You know, Trent, we've been so fortunate that with these quarterbacks, we get an opportunity to see the next generation before the world sees them. So there's a lot of excitement and anticipation over Trevor Lawrence and Justin Fields and Trey Lance. You've been around each of those guys. Share a little perspective on each of those guys and just what makes each of them special.
I'll try to make it quick because I've talked too much. Trevor is unique. He's just unique. He's the ultimate combination of power, twitch, 6'6", extremely powerful and strong, but twitchy like he's, you know, a 6'1", 200-pound kid. Has played more quarterback. If you go back to his freshman year in high school, he's been the quarterback as much as anybody's ever been the quarterback. Nothing fazes him. A unique leader. I also said this about Trevor. The signature moment to me for Trevor Lawrence, and I try to bring this up in every interview I do about Trevor, was at the opening with Craig Knoll. If you remember, he was the dude. He wasn't having the greatest camp. He's having a good camp, not the greatest. And everybody else is worried about Instagram and social media and hype. And Trevor's bugging Craig Knoll at 10 o'clock at night to take him out of bed and teach him more football. He went to the opening. All he wanted to do was learn more ball. He had learned a lot of ball in high school. He wanted to capitalize on the opportunity of being around some really good coaches with NFL pedigrees. And all he wanted to do is learn more ball. And talking to Dabo, the handful of times I've talked to Dabo, says the same thing. Says this guy can't get enough. He just wants to know everything there is to know about football and playing quarterback. So you combine that with his natural talents. I never flinch when people say he's just guaranteed first pick. I get it. I can see why people want him so bad. Now, Justin Fields is unique in the sense that he's a once-in-a-generation type athlete. I mean, this is a kid that in high school ran 4.5 laser at 220 pounds. He's only gotten bigger. He's only gotten faster. He's become a really pure passer. He, too, is playing a lot of quarterback. His completion percentage represents his mastery of his offense. His ability to extend plays but also play on rhythm. You kind of get the best of both worlds, what everybody's fallen in love with in the NFL. We saw Taysom Hill the other day. His athleticism, create time and space, extend plays. We've seen it with Lamar Jackson. We see it with Kyler Murray. You see it with all these great quarterbacks that can attack the line of scrimmage with their legs but also threaten with the arm. I mean, Justin's kind of the ultimate one because he has the twitchiness and that incredible athleticism of some of these guys that aren't as refined as him throwing the ball. And he's only going to get better. I think Trey is super interesting. He's very much like Justin. He just hasn't played a ton of football. Here's a guy that played in kind of an antiquated offense in high school, goes to college and is one every time he's showing up, but he just doesn't have a ton of opportunities of being the quarterback. Now, I don't think that's going to hurt him long-term, but I do think I would draft him high, but he's a guy that needs to play in every preseason game. He needs every rep. He needs as many opportunities to play quarterback early on to make up the gap of the lack of times he's played quarterback. And I think there's some other sneakers in here. I think Ian Book is a really good Kirk Cousins comparison, wherever you settle on that one. I think the kid out of BYU, Wilson,
Wilson,
he's a really good athlete. He was a 100-plus Nike Spark guy at a young age. He's only gotten bigger and stronger. You can see his physicality now when you watch him this year. The pads and the pants are tight, and he looks like a man back there. He's got great arm talent. He's crafty. You know, he's got some, I don't know who to say it, just that intuition, the Drew Brees intuition of playing the position. I think he's somebody to be excited about. Kellen Mond at Texas A&M. Why is anybody talking about Kellen Mond? I mean, this guy's played a ton of football, has a huge arm, is a very good athlete. I remember calling plays for him at the Elite 11. I learned early on that the kid could rip seams. So I think we ran 22 plays in 7-on-7. I think I called like 16 seam routes because the guy could rip seams in as good as anybody. So quarterbacks are only getting better. You know all their trainers. I mean, we know all these guys. They get the best information. They can go on their computer and watch how Tom Brady prepped for a season, how Jared Goff preps for a season. They get all the ins and outs. They can call any of us on the phone and pick our brains. I mean, these guys know so much about the position at such a young age. It blows me away. I mean, you've heard me say at the Elite 11, these dang high school kids are better than I was in my third year in the NFL. And now I look at, I played 14 years, and I was never as good as half the guys coming out. So quarterbacking is getting awesome. The coaches are getting smarter. The schemes are getting better. I only see scoreboards lighting up more, and I only see more of these kids that we talk about. So critically, getting ready for the draft, Herbert, I mean, gosh, we were critical of a kid because he went sixth, and now he's lighting up the league. It wouldn't surprise me if this happens again with this next class.
Well, one thing I know, man, you're awesome. You're awesome not only as a coach and as a leader, but just as a great dude. And I am so happy for you. I'm so excited about the opportunity that's in front of you. I certainly hope that you enjoy the experience because it is something that is great and is memorable, not only for you, but for that whole Lipscomb community. I'm pulling for you. I'm going to check it out. Best of luck to you going forward, man. Thanks so much.
Let me say one more thing, Buck, because I think you'll appreciate this. A little vignette of our football team, what I'm probably most proud of. We played the defending state champs Friday night. We had our way with them. We beat them 56-13. They scored on the last play of the game. We had subbed in. They scored to get their 13th point. We roll on our field goal block team. It shouldn't even have the field goal block because it should be a running clock, but they messed it up. So we roll out our backup field goal block team, and we block the extra point. We had 11 dudes that had sat on the sideline the whole game in a blowout game, and they went out, and they took to heart every play is the most important player in your life. And we had Luke Paul, who's a four-string corner for us, great kid, great worker, come off the edge, lay out, perfect technique, hand in the right place and block the extra point. We used that as an example to our football team that you never know when your number is going to be called. You never know what plays the most important play. Play everyone likes the last play of your life, and our kids took it to heart.
Man, that's awesome, man. It's a great story. Best of luck, Trent, man. I'm looking forward to it, man. Hope you get a ring. Hope you just begin to sow the seeds of something that's going to be great and long-lasting there at Lipscomb.
Thanks, brother. Appreciate you.
Well, Buck, thanks for doing that, man. Thanks for catching up with Trent. I wish I could have joined you on that one. He's one of my favorites to talk to.
Look, man, he's a fantastic coach, a fantastic teacher, and obviously on the outside end, I've been able to be around him and watch him grow as a coach, as a teacher, as a leader. Really excited about all the success that he's had.
And no doubt. Well, thanks again to Trent for taking some time for us on this one. All right. I want to get to some of these quarterbacks, these rookies, and kind of just an assessment of what we've seen and what we can expect going forward, because it's been an interesting week. You've got Justin Herbert, who continues to roll right along. Chargers finally get a win there against the Jets. He was fantastic. You've got Tua, the situation with him getting pulled, which we can get into for Ryan Fitzpatrick. And then you have the unfortunate injury there to Joe Burrow. So just kind of a big picture on those three quarterbacks and what you've seen individually and where we are.
Well, we'll start with Joe Burrow, because I think Joe Burrow was everything that we thought he could be. Some of the concerns that we had were the pieces around him, namely that offensive line. Look, you don't want to put it on those guys for the fact that he was hurt, but we did worry about the amount of throws that he was having behind a leaky offensive line. Would it catch up to him? The positive stuff that we've seen from Joe Burrow, man, he is an A-level competitor. He is what we call a thermostat leader. He changes the temperature in the room when he steps in. We heard Urban Meyer and other guys talk about that and how his leadership ability was felt. And I think you could feel it with the Cincinnati Bengals. This was a very competitive team with Joe Burrow on the field. I like the synergy and connection that he had with Tyler Boyd and T. Higgins. Joe Mixon had been hurt a little bit, but I think you like the pieces on the outside that are around him. I think as he bounces back from this knee injury, and look, it's one that has a few complications, obviously, because it's beyond the ACL, but we've seen guys come back from this. I am bullish on what Joe Burrow is going to be in the National Football League. My challenge will be to Zach Taylor and the Cincinnati Bengals front office, build a fortress around your king. Make sure that you invest heavily in the offensive line. Picks, free agency, everything. The king needs to play behind a fortress. And so they need to make sure they invest and make sure that they give him what he needs to be able to thrive from the pocket.
Yeah, I mean, one nugget here, just looking at the stats here, 37 rushing attempts for Burrow. You look at Justin Herbert has 39. Justin Herbert's 6'6", 240 pounds. Like Herbert can afford to do that. And even he's done a better job of sliding and protecting himself. You talk about putting a fortress in front of Joe Burrow. I think that's obviously very important, Buck, but he's also got to be a little more careful and not quite as reckless as a runner. Now, this injury took place with him in the pocket. Nothing he can do to avoid this one. But I mean, that's something going forward. Yeah. I don't think he's built to be able to carry it that much.
No, and I wouldn't want him to do it. And I think sometimes he has to understand, he has to look around at the guys that have played for a long time and figure out what was their exit strategy in terms of when the pressure comes and I can't win. How do I get out of it? Is that, hey, falling down like Eli Manning and Peyton Manning give themselves up when, hey, defense wins, I'm going to take the sack and I'm going to get out of it? Is it throwing it out of bounds? Is it being quicker in terms of my release, in terms of getting it out, finding and knowing where all the hots inside adjustments are? He has to be able to combat the pressure that he's obviously going to face, but he's a real one. He's a good player.
Yeah, I think he's been outstanding. To me, you look at his vision, that's his superpower, being able to see the whole field. They have done a good bit of the things he did at LSU, but also had some new concepts in there as well. And I think he's seen the field very well. I know in talking to defensive coaches that have played against him, they rave about him just in terms of his ability to figure out what they're doing and to be able to attack them. A lot of times young rookie quarterbacks are playing defensively. They said, he's finding voids and attacking against us. And I think that shows up on the tape. This is a confident kid who stepped right into a difficult assignment there in Cincinnati. And while the wins haven't all piled up, he's had them very competitive each and every week. And I just hope everything comes back fine with the knee. Get a long rehab here. Take your time. Don't rush it. If he has to miss a couple games next year at the start, that's no big deal. Think long-term here. But you're right. The draft, you better go draft free agency. You better go get this kid some help up front.
Yeah, I think it has to be a priority. You have to make sure that you protect him because he's the future, and you want to make sure that he is going to be there for a long time. He's going to be able to play at the level that we saw him just give us a taste of this season.
All right, let's get to the next one that was picked there, because the next quarterback to the Dolphins was Tua Tagovailoa. Weird situation. We talked about it on Monday's Takeaway Pod, the decision there to pull him in that game. That was me and Rhett yelling at each other. You didn't even get a chance to weigh in on that due to time constraints, Buck. So give me your thoughts on that one.
Well, I mean, I just felt like it was, I go back and forth, right? I've done it on a few different mediums. Like, was he right to pull it or whatever? I just think, DJ, part of what it is, and we've talked about this on the previous podcast with Justin Fields. I mean, I want to see how God does when it's bad. Like, we're talking about a two-score game. We're not talking 30 points down.
Yeah.
The great quarterbacks can pull victories from the jaws of defeat because they're able to get hot at a moment's notice. And even when they don't have their A game, they find a way to get it done. They didn't give him an opportunity to show that he had that ability. And so what I worry about now, and not thinking that he or any other quarterback is fragile, but from a coaching standpoint, the fact that you had that in the back of your mind, to me, it just leads me to believe that there's something about Tua that you didn't fully believe in. Yeah. And because, DJ, that's not something that you just on game to say, you know what? Hey, you know what? Let's take him out. Yeah. Like, that's something that there was something that made you feel uncomfortable about Tua Tagovailoa. I will say this, and writing about Tua prior to this game, one thing that has stood out to me in the three games that he had won, teams hadn't challenged him. They hadn't challenged him with pressure. They had been sitting back in zones, and he had been picking them apart. His completion rate against zone coverage or lack of pressure was like 67%. The ball was getting out really quickly. However, the stats before this game, when people were able to pressure him, the completion rate went down to 45%. And I think what we saw, Vic Fangio and the Denver Broncos dialed it up, and Tua didn't have an answer. And so the challenge for him going forward, man, when you put this bad stuff on tape, you can best believe that everyone is going to bring pressure at the Dolphins. How is a young quarterback going to handle it? Better yet, what is Chan Gailey going to equip Tua with from a tool standpoint to be able to handle the pressure that is inevitably coming from opponents down the line?
Yeah, and they had, I mean, I just go back a little bit to what I said. It was a lot of issues there with that offense, not just Tua. And, yeah, again, I don't want to rehash all the stuff we said on Monday, but I just think the other thing, maybe he's got an injury that we don't know about. So a lot of times there's information that doesn't get out, and they could be trying to protect him a little bit from himself. Maybe that's – that to me would be – I could get on board with. That's the thing I could understand.
So here's the thing, right? So DJ, understand this having worked in front offices, right? Because you also know part of your job as someone that works in front office, you're the head coach, you know inevitably I'm going to have to deal with the media. And the media can create a bit of a storm over how we handle this thing. Why not go out and say, hey, young guy was dealing with something, an injury coming into the game or whatever. And I know they didn't want to get in trouble for the league. But what happens is that changes the conversation that now is being had, that's being heard out in the outside world, because you're like, oh, he was injured. That's why they pull him out. Yeah. But when you pull him out and you don't disclose that there's something that may have been bothering him, well, now I'm looking at you like, well, what's really going on? Like, why now? Like, so what? Ryan Fitzpatrick is the closer? Like, we're bringing him in the eighth inning to finish the game. It doesn't make sense. I just think you open up a different can of worms when you had that decision play out like it played out.
And they everybody says we don't pay attention to the outside noise. We don't, trust me, it gets in there. And when you see, like, on ESPN when Mike Greenberg's doing a whole segment about how the Dolphins screwed up by not taking Justin Herbert, because this is the kind of stuff you invite when you do stuff like this. I don't like it, man.
More questions, you bring more questions. Not only do you have to answer it as a head coach, but now guess what it goes to? All the players. Hey, who's the quarterback? Who's the guy? Like, tell us off the record. Like, who's really?
Yeah.
So much stuff.
A lot of noise. So I don't like it. But I am still bullish on Tua going forward. I think
I am.
He missed some. He missed some throws that he normally doesn't miss, that he missed in that game. I thought I thought he took some sacks. A couple of them were just clean beats up front. He didn't have any opportunity to try and get out of there with those. But other times, I thought the picture was a little muddy. He held the ball. I'd much rather have a guy hold the ball when it's muddy as opposed to throwing picks all over the place, which he didn't do. So, and he just missed. He had some guys open. He missed some throws. That's what happens. Happens to anybody.
That's what happens. And that's what you're trying to do. I know we're in the microwave age when it comes to quarterbacks, but that's what you do. You're trying to quicken their clock. That is why defensive coordinators used to feast on young quarterbacks, because you can throw different looks and pre-snap disguises and pressures that they hadn't seen and really messed them up. And so we saw that. So the big thing will be, how does he bounce back this week? How do the Dolphins in general bounce back this week in terms of the way that they use him and build a game plan around him?
All right, let's go to the guy who's been the best of the bunch. He's going to be the rookie of the year. I think that's already pretty much locked up. That was the sixth overall pick in Herbert.
Fantastic, man. He's a fantastic player. I liked him a lot when he's coming out of college. I liked him a lot after the last two games of the year, more so the Pac-12 title game, and then seeing him in the Rose Bowl, because he used his athleticism, and we felt like he was finally unleashed. Haven't had the opportunity to talk to him. You and I both talked to him. Look, he was quiet, but I thought he was smart. I thought he was dialed in. Haven't done the 360 on him when we were able to talk to his coaches, and they were able to kind of shed light on the competitor that he is and how he was really a star-studded athlete in high school. There was a lot to like. I think the thing that has worked with him, the coaches have been able to challenge him to be more aggressive than he was in college. Mm-hmm. And normally it works in reverse, DJ. Normally you get a guy that is coming from college, you have to get him to dial it back a little bit to avoid the turnovers. They actually turned the crank. No. Crank it up. Let's make these throws. Let's take these shots. And he's been good because he's been aggressive. His anticipation, timing, and all that stuff is outstanding. And I think maybe I even underrated his arm. His arm talent is a little big, different man, than I thought. Man, he has a big arm. And I don't know if we always saw that at Oregon, but he's big-time talent, man. He's a big-time talent. I mean, I don't know how else to say it.
Yeah, and I can laugh a little bit because people are like, how did everybody screw this one up? You know, how was he not the first quarterback picked? And I'm sitting here going, guys, this is what we're seeing now is phenomenal, and I'm so happy for him. He's such a great kid, and he's playing out of his mind. He's going to have a long, an outstanding career based on everything we've seen. We did not see this guy at Oregon, the guy that we're seeing right now. He was that's not the same guy. People say, how'd you miss that? Well, he was a different player. He was playing a little bit, you know, you used the word kind of conservative or just kind of being careful. That's kind of how they managed him there. And now he's been set free. It's like watching somebody that's been an animal that's been living in captivity. Now you just kind of set him free. He's out there checking everything out and playing footloose and fancy free and attacking. So the skills were there, the size, the arm strength, the athleticism, the traits were there, the intelligence, the toughness, all that was there. And so now what we're seeing is the mentality change to go along with the ability. So when you combine the mentality with the ability, that's what we get, what we're seeing here from Justin Herbert.
Absolutely. He's more aggressive. They've enabled him. And also, DJ, you've seen it right there. Now, he flashes every week like you expect a high-end quarterback to flash. Like a top six quarterback, he should flash every week. He should show you each week once or twice. Yeah. Oh, okay, yeah, that's why he's a top 10 pick. And you have to give him an opportunity to play through his mistakes, which they've been able to do because he's had some egregious turnovers, some ones you're like, that's not the best throw, whatever, but he's worked through it. And I think the thing that you like about him, they've lost a ton of close games. But I feel like his grit, his toughness, his resiliency, I never feel like he wavers. And so if I'm in the building with the Chargers, I feel great about my quarterback. And now I think I saw your tweet about how to spin it forward for him.
Yeah.
If they can get an A-level running back, like a dude. And I think you said one other thing on offense.
Well, I mean, right? they've got, I mean, when they get Eckler back, I think Eckler's like a top 10-ish back. He just has been out. That's what's been crazy. He's been doing all this without Eckler, who's a really good, versatile player. I mean, think about easy completions. You got easy completion with him anytime you want. But I'm looking at it going, if they can address the offensive line, which still needs to get better, and the secondary, those are kind of the two big areas. And I'll be curious to see, you know, the nice thing having the quarterback on the rookie deal, Hunter Henry, they franchised him this year, and his numbers aren't huge, but man, Buck, anytime you want it, you know you can get it, right? That there's value in a player like that who's mm-hmm. just going to uncover, catch everything you throw to him. Got Keenan Allen, he's paid, he's taken care of. Mike Williams, that price tag's coming due here pretty soon. But Hunter Henry would be interesting because they franchised him once. I think it was
$10 million.
Yeah, so I think – I'm pretty sure – I have to look it up, but I believe it would be a little over $12 million next year to franchise him again. I would not be surprised if they can't get a deal done with him, just franchise him again, bring him back, and keep that nucleus around him because this group really could be together with Eckler, and you can add a bigger back to complement Eckler. This group's going to be together for a while around him.
Yeah, and they get a chance to grow together. And so with that in mind, Dennis, okay, how can we fix the defense? Because we got a small window to get this defense right. And so
– got to get some corners, man.
They're long in the tooth in the back end. They're long in the tooth in the back end. And so they need to get better. Casey Hayward has kind of come back to the pack. Chris Harris Jr. has been hurt. And, I mean, look, at this stage of his career, you want more. And so they have to do that, especially if they're going to continue down this road of playing the defense that they're playing. They have to get playmakers that can take the ball away on the outside. And so
I do want to say this because and I know them very well, haven't, you know, covered their games for the last 3 years. But there's been some talk about on the internet or whatever about Tom Telesco, you know, and people questioning whether he's in jeopardy. That's crazy. That is crazy to me. Look at the talent on this roster. Go talk to people around the league about how highly regarded Tom Telesco is for the job he's done building this team. He found the quarterback. He's got the home run quarterback. He's got, you know, you get Derwin James back, Drew Tranquil back. I think this defense will turn around. And he's, you know, people say, oh, the offensive line. I say it too. The offensive line needs to get better. That needs to be the focus, but it's not like he hasn't devoted resources. He hadn't hit home runs. You know, when you go out there and you, mm-hmm. you know, like you take Forrest Lamp early, you're the first three rounds, you take Dan Feeney. Those guys have been okay. Haven't been great players. But it's not like they just aren't picking guys.
No, you know what you do, DJ? Like now we've seen it. I think you kind of hit me to this. You double down on it. So now what you do is, all right, you know, we're going to fix it. We're going to throw draft picks and free agents at it.
Yep.
And we're going to make sure that we have enough in the building to get it right. One way or the other, we're going to get it right. So if we have to spend a little more in free agency, we're going to make sure that we have enough guys in the building that we feel like we can put the best five on the field and protect the king. And so it's one of those things that they have to be able to do. But, yeah, this is a window, and they have 4 years left before it becomes really pricey on the quarterback. So let's build it right and make the right decisions or whatever. And so I do think that you have to separate things that are front office driven versus things that are coach driven. Front offices go and acquire the talent. They do that stuff. Coaches help develop it, whatever, but they really play a huge role in the schematics and the tactics and those things. And so I think Tom Telesco should feel good, because the one thing that we know he found a quarterback that, yep, that buys you time. It buys you, yeah, time when you hit the quarterback.
I mean, I know what the record is, Buck, but I'm sitting here going, you've got a top five edge rusher, probably top two or three, in my opinion, in Joey Bosa, who's a dominant, mm-hmm, player. Derwin's got to stay healthy. That's an issue. But if he stays healthy, you've got a top three safety. Keenan Allen's a top 3 to 4 wide receiver. You know, Hunter Henry's a top 8 or 9 tight end. Eckler's a top 10 back. I mean, they've got a lot of premier players on this roster. It's a lot easier when the quarterback's one of the, I would say, if you're going to have an open draft and draft for the future, the quarterback will be one of the first five picks.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think it's easy. I think the pieces are there. You want to make sure you continue to build this the right way. And then they just have to figure out a way, like from an organizational standpoint, they figure out a way to win these close games. Like, yeah, that's what it comes down to. If they, can win half of the ones that they've dropped that are one score games. I mean, we're talking about this team in a different context.
No doubt. All right. Well, this has been a fun discussion here. Fun podcast. Again, thanks to Trent Dilfer for joining Buck today. That was fun to listen to. I hope you guys have enjoyed it. Wish you guys all a very happy Thanksgiving week here, and hope you guys have a wonderful weekend, and we appreciate you guys listening to Move the Sticks presented by Zaxby's.